Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. And I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host, and I would also like to welcome you to our show. Last week, we held a roundtable discussion with the souls of Supreme Court Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Antonin Scalia. We found their discussion rather interesting, and we never even came close to asking all of the questions. So tonight, we're going to continue with part two of their discussions. Part one's available on our YouTube channel. The channel's in the name of Barry Strom and has over 560 videos. If you'd like to download the videos, just go to Podomatic.com and search Channeling History.
Now, recently, I posted a video on YouTube that is, I consider, very important. I posted images of what Jesus really looked like in life. I posted the way the resurrection actually took place, the incredible miracle, the energies involved. And I used the evidence from the Shroud of Turin to provide an image that is very, very similar to other images that I painted of him from people that have seen his image. Jesus does still come to people, and people have been able to see his image. The amazing part of this is that the modern image matches the one off of the shroud. The video's on my YouTube channel. I suggest you go in and see it. It's proof of a miracle. And it's proof that God walked the earth, or that Jesus walked the earth. So, Connie, let's do ourselves a short disclaimer tonight. I know last week was spectacular. We had attorneys call us and tell us how interesting the information was. Now, we don't want anybody taking action from information that we give through our channelings. So, the opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parix Network, or of our sponsors. And in addition, we also do a prayer protection, because even though the spirits we're speaking to are incredibly good, it is possible that something can slip through that we don't want. So, Connie, let's say the prayer and get on with our show.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God. Amen.
Okay, tonight, as we did last week, we're going to use a roundtable discussion format so that each of our three guests will comment on the same question.
Once again, we'd like to thank the three of you for coming through for us tonight. Each of you had very strong beliefs and pursued them with honor throughout your lives. As you answer these questions tonight, would you mind pointing out if any of your opinions have changed now that you're on the other side? Please feel free to answer in depth. If we run out of time, we'll have another show next week. No problem. Okay. Number one question, now that each of you are on the other side, if your opinion has changed concerning an issue, would you tell us the issue and how your opinion has changed?
Okay, we're going to start with Justice O'Connor tonight. When I was on the bench, I thought that women's rights was a primary issue. I felt that they had a choice to do as they wished. I thought that if a woman had a problem with an abortion, that, well, I didn't agree with it morally, I felt that there was this definite right that they had to do as they pleased. Now that I'm over here, I understand that you really are taking a life and that you are definitely ending a life plan for an unborn infant. Now, there are certainly times that the life of that infant should be terminated if the mother is at risk, if there are reasons that that child cannot live through the pregnancy. I think that there should be a middle of the road. I think that the stress has to be towards having the infant given every opportunity to live. But once you're over here, you truly do understand that God wants each of these life plans to come to fruition. Justice Scalia, I never had any doubts. I always felt that it was taking a life. I do believe that there should be instances where it is allowed, but I do not believe that there are any instances where a healthy embryo should be destroyed. There are many things that individuals can do if they do not want the child. There are many families that would rather adopt. There are many people that want children that cannot have them. But I have always been pro-life, and nothing has changed that since I've been on this side. Justice Ginsburg. I know that all of you have been waiting for my comments on this because my background was very, very progressive. I felt that a woman should be able to make her choice, that it was really her right, and that there should be nothing to infringe upon that right. Now that I'm over here, I do understand that there is a definite immorality to taking the life of an unborn infant. God is very specific in what he wants. He wants every unborn infant to have the right to live out his life plan. There is no doubt about that. While I still totally understand that an infant should be able to be born and be protected, I still understand totally how a woman wants to make her own decisions. There has to be some middle ground. I think an answer lies in education of the mother. Now that I'm over here, I thoroughly understand the concept of what God wants. But there should be some provision protecting the baby and also protecting the desires of the mother. I do believe that adoption is probably the right answer, but I think that it is up to society to make it much easier and to assist the mother that feels so strongly that it does not want to have the child. There are definitely times that a pregnancy can ruin the life of the mother. I do believe there has to be flexibilities. But I would say that abortion is the one area of which I have undergone the most considerable thought since arriving here.
Thank you all. Do you feel that there should be any limitations to transgender males participating in traditional women's sports?
Justice Scalia. Man made God, man made woman. There is no way around that. Now that I'm here, I do understand that there are situations where a human can suffer emotional damage because of the stress of the sex to which they have been born. There is no doubt that there are individuals that have been born male that would rather be born female. But they must learn to live under the circumstances that God has given them. My belief still is that there should never be a person that has been born with the physical characteristics of a male competing with an individual that has been born with the physical characteristics of a female. I firmly believe that there should never be a time that a physical male can compete with a physical female. Justice Ginsburg. There are many that believe there should be no limitations into how a soul competes between male and female. You hear and understand totally that there is no difference when in heaven between a male and a female. There are no sexes here, so the argument does not apply when you're in heaven. I now feel that it is very unfair for a person with male strength to compete against a person that was born a female. There are some incredible athletes, both male and female. But God has truly wanted a difference, a physical difference, between the males and the females. And I concur that it is highly unfair to put a young woman in a situation where she has to compete with a person with the physical characteristics of a male. Justice O'Connor. There has always been a question of individual rights. Does a male have the inherent right to compete against a female? That may be a question of legislation, but there is no question that there is a difference in the physical strengths of those that have been born male and those that have been born female. Females are capable of doing many, many things as well or better than their male counterparts. But one thing the female cannot do is physically compete in many areas. There is a difference between physical and mental competition. There truly is no difference in mental capacities and the mental abilities to compete. But because of human evolution and the fact that males were the traditional providers of food and had to do things much more physical than the woman to raise the baby, I do not believe that today there should ever be an event where a woman must compete physically on an equal footing with a male.
Thank you. Are there any limits to a governmental agency forcing employees to be vaccinated? And does this apply to the military as well?
Justice Ginsburg. When you speak of the military, you're speaking of a situation where members have to be sent to areas where different types of illnesses are predominant. The military needs to be able to have its individuals vaccinated so that they can safely send them to any area of the world. Members of the military must understand that when they voluntarily join the military. Now, there are certain instances, and I know the question that you're speaking about probably pertains more to the COVID threat that the humans just went through. In my mind, the military definitely has the right to require individuals to be vaccinated from the type of contagious disease as was COVID. If you think back to World War I, we lost as many members of the military to the flu as we did to the fighting. Now, in the case of this COVID vaccine, individuals had many worries and many fears. The government did not handle the vaccination properly. But I do believe that the government had every right in the military to require the vaccination. The people working for the federal government, does the government have the right to force them to be vaccinated? And in that instance, I do not agree. Justice Scalia, there are times that individuals must pursue their individual rights. The military, I think, is a different situation. And I do believe that the military has the right to force safe vaccinations upon its members. The example of World War I was excellent. I do not believe that when the government employs a person, that they should have the right to enforce vaccinations. There are many people that fear reactions to the vaccination, and there are many people that fear conspiracies involving vaccinations. So I do believe that the military has the right now, but I do not believe that any private institution can force another individual to be vaccinated against their will. Health workers would be an exception to that because they're in constant contact. But as I watch from over here, I do not believe that the government ever made a firm case that the vaccinations were safe. Justice O'Connor. I do not believe that the Constitution gives the government the right to force its employees to have any type of medication. What an individual does to its own body is the right of that individual. Now, institutions do have the right, in my mind, to terminate anyone that puts any other individual at risk. But I also concur that the government did a poor job of establishing the fact of whether the vaccine was safe or not. Many people cannot take vaccines because they may have allergies or physical problems. A person with an immune problem cannot take a vaccine that gives an individual an infection. So there have to be exceptions. If an individual has a problem with a vaccine and their doctor concurs, there should never be an instance where that individual is terminated from their employment. Now that individual must be protected from those that are sick, and that opens another whole area of discussion, which I do not think our government has an answer for currently.
Thank you. As you all know, the First Amendment guarantees freedom of speech. How does the right of freedom of speech apply to social media?
Justice Ginsburg. This is a very, very difficult question as it applies to social media. If an organization or corporation owns that social media, then they have a right to conduct business as they deem necessary or as they want to conduct it. Now, the question comes into how that social media is using the public provided methods of communication. The internet is public. And if that organization uses that public information, they definitely have some obligation to speak the truth and not use the public source to carry propaganda. Legislation has not moved rapidly enough to determine how all this works currently. I think that the legislature has got to address this issue, and it will be interesting to see how legislation answers this problem. Justice Scalia. I feel that as long as social media uses public communications, that they have an obligation to provide both sides of an argument. For instance, if a network is extremely liberal, we see today that the liberal side is all that is on that network. If public communication is used to only present one side of an argument, it is impossible for the people to determine the truth of the argument. If a business uses public information, I think that they are required to give both sides or simply to remain neutral. Today, I think it is a great problem in that the American people are often only given one side. As an example, look at Russia. Their propaganda has been misleading the people for many years, and those people have absolutely no idea what is taking place in the outside world. Freedom of speech has limitations. The legislature should clarify the effect of propaganda or the misuse of facts in public communication. Justice O'Connor. The Constitution is very clear about giving freedom of speech. An individual does not have a constitutional obligation to argue both sides of an event. The Constitution gives an individual the right to speak. The United States Constitution is very specific in giving individuals the right to say things that other individuals do not like to hear. The question becomes what happens when they say things that individuals do not want to hear that goes against what the politicians that control the airways want to hear. The Constitution does not provide that the individuals that control communication are neutral. Political parties, when they come into power, control the different public facilities. And sometimes it is very difficult to hear minority arguments. It is possible that social media has so many outlets that all arguments can be presented. The communications technologies have grown so rapidly that they have outgrown legislation that adequately defines neutrality in public communication. There is no doubt that monopolies of communication controlled by the government, should be neutral and should present all sides. There is no legislation or bureaucratic groupings that guarantee this. Justice Ginsburg. I feel very strongly that all sides should be allowed to present arguments on public owned airways. If an individual becomes so strong that they can control communications through a certain media, then it is the obligation of the government to step in and assure a neutrality in the information that is brought forth. Today you're seeing many very powerful individuals that have great control over what is transmitted on their through their organizations. These organizations require the internet or publicly owned means of giving the information to the public. If the entire source of information is privately owned, the government would have little control over what is spoken. If the public owns the means of communication, there is definitely an obligation that a neutrality be maintained and that all sides of the argument be presented to the people. When the First Amendment was made part of the Constitution, the Founding Fathers wanted all sides to be presented. I feel that the rights of the individual to speak as they want is very strong. They obviously cannot generate violence. You cannot go into a movie theater and yell fire. But as long as an individual does not hurt another person, then they have a right to speak, and that right has to be preserved.
Do you feel that the Constitution assures equal treatment of various political views on social media?
Justice Ginsburg, I do not feel that the Constitution provides proper penalties for abuse of the First Amendment. I think that individuals must have that right to speak in opposition to the government. Today you are seeing the government taking political sides, and people with opposing views are often prevented from stating those views. When the government owns the means of communication, it is very easy to do things that prevent an individual from speaking against government. Justice Scalia. Today you're seeing the political politicization of institutions meant to be neutral. If you listen to the news, you will have no problem hearing situations where the Justice Department takes actions against individuals in opposition to the government. Lobbyists have great control over how the Constitution is utilized today. In my opinion, the rights of the First Amendment are exactly as written. The Constitution is the document that provides the guidance for how the Constitution is enforced. Today, there are incredibly powerful individuals in government that can determine who gets appointed to boards, that gets the right to determine who becomes judges, who does many things, and many of those people are only interested in personal strength and wealth as well. The First Amendment should be interpreted exactly as stated until the federal legislature changes or amends the law. Justice Ginsburg, or I'm sorry, Justice O'Connor. I feel that there are instances today that the First Amendment cannot clearly define. There are people that control how the communication networks are used. Today, as I watch from over here, I see that there are many instances where agencies that should be neutral, that should be enforcing our laws, are being influenced by politicians. I feel that there should be changes, modifications to the freedom of speech to clearly prevent people using that right to hurt others. Any changes have to be very carefully made, and they have to be determined to be the will of the people, and they have to be determined to help and not provide weapons to politicians. It is a very difficult time in our country and a time of very, very great change. None of us can foresee the future when you are a human living. We have the gift of being able to sometimes look to the future and see what is going to take place. And I can tell you that there will be incredible technological changes in the future. Congress has got to be very alert to these changes, because just as these changes will come, there will be individuals that want to take advantage of them.
Very, very good answers there. Do you see any difference between equal treatment on social media or public networks?
Justice Ginsburg. Yes. Social media is in the hands of millions of individuals. And each one of those individuals under the First Amendment has the right of free speech. That means that these people can say what they want. And sadly, much of what is said on social media has little basis in fact. Many people use social media to spread lies, to spread their argument, and even people use social media to gang up on others. Public networks need to remain neutral. We have seen that institutions that the government funds on public networks also have become very opinionated. The government must be very watchful that neutrality is maintained in public media. Justice Scalia. A great failing of current government is maintaining neutrality in public media. Not only is there a lack of neutrality, but politicians in control have actually used public media to their advantage. An ideal situation would be if public media was totally controlled by individuals with no political affiliations. But that is never going to take place. It's my opinion that the government has allowed public media to become weaponized. I think that legislatures must step in and put in regulations to keep public media neutral. I do not see any need to change the First Amendment. The Founding Fathers were brilliant when they wrote it, and I think that we should appreciate what they've done. Justice O'Connor. Now that I'm over here and have a much better idea of what is taking place, I believe that the federal legislature needs to act to make changes that assure neutrality in public communication. Throughout the last decade, changes have taken place that have allowed publicly funded institutions to bring politicized opinions over the public networks. I think that wherever public funds are involved, there should be a great insistence upon neutrality. Social media is very different. Technologies has allowed everyone that wishes to voice their opinions on social media. They are exercising their freedom of speech, and there is little we can do. It is only when they become traitors to our country, when they promote violence, and when they try to undermine the security of our country, that they should be stopped and there should be checks. Social media has created incredible problems. The First Amendment guarantees that individuals have an opinion, and they should, and be able to voice it. What the First Amendment does not do is assure that individuals can understand what they're being told. Groups of individuals can get together on social media and manipulate the minds of many. There are times that the government must step in and not allow social media to be allowed to undermine our country.
The 1973 decision of Roe v. Wade read reproductive rights into the Ninth Amendment and the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. What was each of your opinions on this interpretation for reproductive rights?
Justice Ginsburg. That is a question that is a bit difficult for me to answer. I always felt in life that a woman had a right to make the decisions of her own body. The interpretation of Roe v. Wade provided an argument that in my heart I knew was not correct as defined by the Constitution. But I felt that those two arguments provided a woman to have the rights that were ignored by the Constitution. I felt that the Constitution should be more of an interpretive living document. And I thought that those two arguments provided the strongest support for Roe v. Wade. So I felt that since the Constitution was not going to be changed, that those arguments would suffice. Justice Scalia. Now, here is where my friend and I differed greatly in life. I felt that it was a lousy interpretation of the law of the Constitution. I felt that there was no strong basis for abortion. I felt that that argument that was made was highly inaccurate. And I felt that there was no right under the Constitution for abortion. So when events took place that Roe v. Wade was clarified and overturned, as I watched, I was very happy. Justice O'Connor. I always felt in my heart that the logic that was used for Roe v. Wade had problems. But I also felt that a woman, the rights of the woman, were never clearly defined under the Constitution. You see, when the Constitution was written, a woman had almost no rights. And through the years, rights had to be added for women. The Constitution is very difficult to change. In order to amend or change, much has to take place. Women never got the right to vote for over 100 years under the Constitution. So, it was not difficult in my mind to understand that the rights of women as defined under the Constitution, lag behind the rights of men. I felt that there were problems with the interpretation, but I felt that the interpretation under the Constitution had not adjusted according to the changing times.
Okay, medication abortions now account for over half of all abortions. Should the abortion pill remain a government-approved drug?
Justice Ginsburg. Possibly a very difficult question, but I feel that the drug should be allowed to remain legal. There is no reason that the Drug Administration deeply considers the fact that the law has recently changed in the interpretation of Roe v. Wade. The example I would like to use for you is with a handgun. A handgun does not have to be used to take a life. And just because the pill exists does not mean that it should be used to take a life as well. But when it is a time that is required to be used, the woman has the right to make that decision in the end. She will have to bear the consequences for her acts, just the same as an individual with a handgun must bear the responsibility for how that gun is used. Justice Scalia. This is a difficult interpretation. The overturning of Roe v. Wade simply sends the law back to the states for determination. So in my mind, whether the pill is legalized or not, should become a state issue as well. If the state determines that abortion is highly illegal, then the pill should be illegal in that state as well. Justice O'Connor. I think that now that I'm on the other side, I would be more inclined to agree with what Justice Scalia just said. Many people don't understand exactly what transpired when the Supreme Court determined that Roe v. Wade had problems as defined in the Constitution. If a state determines that abortion is illegal, then the act of aborting becomes, according to how they would write their laws, illegal as well. So an abortion pill at that stage would be no different than a doctor performing an abortion. So I would think that the pharmacies in that state would not be allowed to sell the pill. But I also believe that the reverse of that is also correct. That if a state determines abortion is legal, then in that state, that pill as well would be legal as a means. And I would think that in most instances, that pill would be a preferable type of abortion, because it is certainly not as intrusive as a doctor doing what they do when they perform abortions. I must add that since I'm over here, I totally understand that God feels very strongly that abortions are taking a life and ending a life plan. So I do feel that that needs to be pointed out at that point. Okay. Well, that we're running out of time again, and I still got a bunch of questions. So the answers that we are hearing are absolutely incredible. The minds that are speaking to you are some of the sharpest legal minds that ever lived. And you are hearing all sides of an argument. Even though these people have very strong opinions, they are definitely giving you all that you need to understand and to interpret a situation. So needless to say, they're going to be back again next week. And part three is going to be every bit as interesting as part one and two. Part one and two are available on the YouTube channel. I'll be putting them up tonight. These are incredible conversations. I hope that you tell your friends. I know they're not going to be interesting to everyone. But if you truly want to understand the world around you, this is a wonderful starting place. My 10th book, Modern Message of the Archangels, is available for purchase. It's on my website, barrystrom.com. You can buy it on Amazon. It is an incredibly interesting book. We've channeled 20 different archangels, and I know most of you did not even know 20 angels, different angels existed. So tell your friends about it. I think if you buy it, you are going to be very, very happy.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us tonight on Channeling History. As I've said before, we've been doing this show for 3 years and trying to bring you the truth about history by speaking to the souls that live the events. Tonight's guests were a wonderful example of that. It's only by understanding the events of the past that you can prepare properly for the future. So God bless you all. Have a good week.
Okay. All of our shows are available on our YouTube channel. They're my name, Barry Strome. You want to download them, go to Podomatic.com and search Channeling History. We hope that you enjoyed our show tonight. I know I want to go back and listen to it because when I'm channeling, I don't remember a whole lot of what I say. So enjoy the shows. We try to do our best to bring you the information. Thank you for listening. And please join us on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Pararex Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.